Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means. We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a magic beast in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Gad, what are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Mike, Manny, how you doing this week, buddy?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking an 805. It is my last beer of the six-pack. It's very sad for me.
What kind of beer is an 805, sir?
It's a blonde ale.
Blonde ale. That's nice. That's nice. Josh, I have some bad news for you, buddy.
What's that?
I just saw you turn all the way around.
Yeah.
Got a little ball patch coming in finally. You've been like the last guy to hold out. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, it's just the way my hair grows. I got a little swirl there.
Okay. You're geary. That the Japanese would call that a geary geary. And I got to tell you, buddy, your geary geary is getting less hairy hairy.
All right, well, I'll take a picture from the rear and see what the gear looks like. But I'm telling you, fucking dude, my family, heads of hair till the end of time.
That's true. That's true. Both Doc still has some.
Well, it comes from your mother, male pattern baldness. And my pop, her dad, hair till the day he died.
All right, it just looked a little thin from that angle. I'm not trying to pick on you. And tell me, good friend, it's a beautiful looking beer you got there. What do you got?
Thanks. I did a little beer exchange with some friends this weekend, and I traded some Treehouse for some Trillium, and I am drinking a Cutting Tiles, a double IPA with raw wildflower honey from Trillium Brewing in Canton, Massachusetts.
Now, I'm not a huge fan of the IPAs because usually they over pine cone that thing on me. How's that one?
It's nice. It's a little bitter. A little more bitter than I would usually drink, but it's nice. It's a nice beer. Right.
You're one of the few beer snobs that doesn't make me fucking hate you.
I mean, it's 8.5%, so.
Now I hate you.
Gets the job done. Now I hate you.
Gets the job done. It's a wildflower hammer.
Wildflower hammer. Nice. LT, my brother from another mother. How you doing, brother, and what you drinking?
I am drinking some Johnny Walker's Blender's Batch, and I have finished this bottle.
Nice, my friend. Nice.
One and done.
What are you drinking?
Thank you for asking. I'm once again drinking Thompson's, and because of you, I'm not drinking Kentucky Bourbon. I was at the store today, and Jim Beam is on sale. $15 for a fucking handle. $15 for a fucking handle, and I still passed it up for you, you asshole. Yeah,
fuck that. They own a bunch of Kentucky bourbons, a Jim Beam company, motherfuckers.
I checked my Reynolds wrap, LT, and my Reynolds wrap was made in a factory in Illinois.
So I'm telling you, I looked on a website, and they said that some of that was made in Kentucky.
So some of it.
Some of that's fine. Of
I checked right, my Pop-Tarts, and they were delicious.
Fuck you, Mike.
Mike, that's the funniest fucking thing you've
well
ever said in your
Michael.
Goddamn life. You dog, you.
Speaking of dogs,
today's segue is we're going to be talking about dogs, not just superheroes inspired by dogs, because there's very fucking few of those, but we're going to be talking about super dogs in general. Anyone got an idea who the first dog superhero was?
I'm gonna guess it was Streak, the Wonder Dog.
I might go before that. We might have to go Rin Tin Tin if we're going like Lone Ranger-ish. Because I bet those novelizations came up before that. Or even Call of the Wild.
Well, no, if we're gonna go that way, then Rex the Wonder Dog was a 1920s silent film star well before Rin Tin Tin.
I would go with Rex the Wonder Dog because those kind of things are easily, I always say the Long Ranger is easily in the superhero genre. So I think Rex probably qualies.
And I don't think Rin Tin Tin was at the beginning of television, so
yeah.
He would not predate.
Not play that early.
Oh, I thought there were some serials. My bad. I'm probably thinking of Rex.
What were you thinking, LT?
I thought Rex was from 52.
So he was from 52, but I think he was based on the 1920s dog movies that they had. If you're going to talk straight comic books, I think Streak in 1946 in the pages of Green Lantern.
All right, I'll go with that. Mike, do you want to give us a little background on Dog's first appearances, or do you want to just jump right in today? Because this is kind of a wide-arcing one. I mean, we don't have to tell people the origin of fucking Dogs.
I mean, it's also amazing we haven't done this yet. I feel like we have, and maybe we just...
We've done pets. We've probably danced around this.
Yeah, if you're interested in our just pets episode...
Yeah, all pets.
That was episode 107.
Was there a one horse in there?
Horse Comet, the super horse.
Comet right off the bat, you piece of shit.
I knew you were referring to Super Horse.
Yeah.
No, he was referring to Comet.
Super Horse, right in the slide you give people. Super Horse.
Yeah, Super Horse.
Yeah,
we're talking about dogs.
We're talking about dogs.
From the 70s, the horse was Super Horse. Briefly in the 70s.
I'm sorry, really?
I'm not sure what we're doing there.
What are you talking about?
Talking about a super horse.
Are we including wolves in this topic?
We'll allow it, right? A little wolf, a little Lobo action.
I'll allow it.
Sure.
Well, all right, Josh, you want to start us off with a super wolf? Go ahead.
No. Actually, I want to start off with a super dog. I'm probably the greatest super dog of all time, in my personal opinion.
Oh, don't do it. Don't fucking do it. I'm going to do it.
You ready for it?
Don't fuck you.
And probably from the comic, one of the few comic books I own the entire run of.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm talking about Roberto from Gru the Wanderer.
Gru the Wanderer, that's a great sidekick dog.
Tragically few comic books I have owned from start to finish. And Gru the Wanderer is one of them. There are probably a few outliers that were magazines or special editions that I don't have. But as far as the straight up run from issue 1 to end, Gru the Wanderer is a comic book I have in full collection. Just a great comic. Roberto is Gru's ever loving. He comes in, I don't even know how far he comes in, maybe 20, 30 issues in. He just jumps in there, and Roberto is just like the dog that follows.
He's kind of the straight man to Gru, right?
Yeah, he's sort of, it's a reverse Calvin and Hobbes. And Roberto with no dialogue is still the straight man in the entire comic book. And it's brilliant, just the way it's done. You always get a sense of how Roberto feels. Zero dialogue, just characterization, just him looking. It's one of the one of the longer runs of a canine sidekick where he is a necessary component of the story.
If we're going to talk about comics that we're all in on, that you have all of them, my choice would be a comic that I have all of them for, and that would be from The Boys, The Terror. A dog that can fornicate on command.
Not a bad power.
A dog that is alluded to have superpowers because he takes a chunk out of one of the superheroes.
Oh, they shut that dog up.
Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorite dogs.
The Terror's a great dog. Not only because I love bulldogs, but I do like the way he's not shown in the TV show, just referred to constantly, like, show the fucking dog. God damn it. Getting back to Roberto, by the way, I really do love the way he plays a little bit like the Greek chorus without ever saying a word. Like, he speaks, but Sergio Aragonés is a genius when it comes to making that dog speak with an expression.
Absolutely. I think he's in more panels than almost any other super dog as far as impacting story is. And he's just the look of reason, or the look of, he's the look of the audience. You're right. Yeah. He's the Greek pathos, just watching Gru sort of struggle through life, and he is the watchdog that follows. He's a good character, and yeah, you're right. Aragonés is just absolutely brilliant in telling a story with as little dialogue as he can manage.
Yeah, that is an oddly deep comic book. Like, if you have a minor in Greek literature, you get a lot of the stupid stuff that's going on in the background that you might not get.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you having a degree in philosophy, I know you know some of the stuff that's going on.
Also, just one of the nicest guys we've ever met.
Oh, total sweetheart.
Like, the guy, if you meet Aragonés at a con, that guy is ready to just chat you up.
And so, if you speak Spanish, he will not let you go.
Seriously.
He will not. That's, mi amigo! That's it. You're done. That's the rest of your con. And he loves chatting with
fans. He's a great guy.
Also, let's not forget, Rafiro also very often saves the day by pulling the right lever or, you know, pulling the curtain back to show the wizard behind the thing. And that happens often.
Good boy.
All right, Mikey, I'm going to let you go because I don't think you're going to pick my guy.
I'm going to go with Hot Dog from Archie Comics.
Excellent. Aww. Good one. I like Hot Dog.
Trusted canine of Jughead Jones. Hot Dog first appears in 1968, surprisingly. He is a late appearance. He's a total mutt. He has the same proclivities for laziness and food that Jughead does. And in Afterlife with Archie, it is the death of Hot Dog who gets run over by Reggie that causes the zombie apocalypse. Because Jughead is so torn up about the death of Hot Dog, he goes to Sabrina and begs her to do something, and she does tries to bring Hot Dog back to life, and Hot Dog bites fucking Jughead, and then the game is fucking on. And if you haven't read Afterlife with Archie, you need to check it out. It is the Archie gang in a zombie apocalypse. It's great.
Great.
Part Pet Cemetery, part Archie comic book. It's awesome. Another one of the characters who doesn't speak, at least they can't hear him speak, but he does have the thought bubbles. You get a lot of thought bubbles from Hot Dog.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. He's got his own monologue going.
He's got his inner monologue
going.
And he's
perfectly happy about it.
Yeah. I don't think he can eat that many burgers. I'll have to help. Doop doop boo. Kind of like, sounds like my dog. One of my favorite dogs of all time, easily a superhero of amazing superpowers, Hawk, because he's absolutely, it's in the title, he's the number one super guy, and that would be Hong Kong Phooey.
Hong Kong Phooey.
Wow.
Well
nice.
Played, Tom.
Thank you. Well, I loved Hong Kong Phooey. That was like one of my favorite cartoons as a kid.
Too. Oh, yeah. Scatman Crothers just ripping it up as an animated dog.
I'm going to use my double nunchuck sidewinder spinny kicky thing. Just let me look at my big book of kung fu tricks. And then the cat would save his ass.
Yeah.
Fun Alex fact, what was the cat's name? Hands up.
Jazz hands? I don't know.
Spot. I can't think of it. What is it?
The striped Spot. Cat was named Spot. That's right.
The striped cat was named Spot.
Well played.
They had some great voice actors on that. The sergeant went, ooh, ooh. So stupid. Such a great, dumb cartoon. But the Supermobile, the Hong Kong Phooey Supermobile was so cool. Everything about that cartoon rocked. I really enjoyed every second that cartoon was on. I've even watched some old ones, and, of course, they don't exactly hold up, but the nostalgia pulls me through, and I just really love them. He jumps in that filing cabinet. Tommy, what do you got for the next one?
My number one super guy.
Yeah, that's a great one. It was a really good cartoon. Oh,
so good. I loved Hong Kong Fui.
Well, I mean, if we're going for nostalgia, then I would have to go with Underdog.
I did love me some Underdog.
I'm sorry, how fast was Underdog? Speed of lightning,
bolt of thunder,
fighting all who rob
plunder. Underdog.
All right, Tommy, here you go. I'm going to give you a quiz.
Yep.
Name me three bad guys. Three bad guys.
Simon Bar Sinister.
Simon Says
Three. Awesome.
I'm going to go with Sweet Polly.
She was not a bad guy. She was his sweetheart. That's wrong.
Was she?
Yes.
Who knows?
Shut up. Just name another one.
That's all I got.
Josh, what do you got?
From Underdog. Jesus. Underdog.
Simon Bar Sinister was an easy one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another one from Underdog. I don't know.
Overcat.
Overcat. True that.
Overcat. And there's one. There's who was the. There was one that was a striped suit. And it was a dog. He was like a gangster. I can't remember his name. Mikey, can you name any Underdog villains besides Overcat and. Simon Bar Sinister. Nope. That was the easy. That's low hanging fruit, buddy.
I got nobody.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
I also said Sweet Polly, but he didn't believe me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, what did you like about that cartoon?
What wasn't there to like? I mean, he was this shoeshine boy that was also a superhero. He was an everyman that had super strength and could save people.
Well, he took drugs.
We all watched Mighty Mouse, Underdog. Like, that was the mix, right? And the worst part was, at the time, while we were watching those and developing that and sort of systemically processing those things into superhero comics and Superman, the worst part about that era was the Superman cartoons were terrible. The allegories for Superman cartoons were so much better than Superman cartoons.
You mean Underdog?
I mean Underdog, Mighty Mouse. All the allegorical cartoons for Superman were way better than the Superman cartoons at the time.
Well, the 1930s Superman cartoons were poorly drawn, but well written at least.
Right, but we're talking 30 years later, right?
Yeah, those were terrible.
Yeah, they were terrible.
I mean, Underdog was created in 1960 for General Mills.
Yeah, I mean, watch Underdog and watch all those cartoons where the super people are the, you know, even Hong Kong Fui, right, had his hidden, you know, his alter ego. Right, and he was going out and fighting crime, like all those alter ego cartoons at the time. The Superman cartoons at that time were just awful. They were
trying to stick with the comic book court of authority, and they weren't allowing anyone to punch anyone. Right. Superhero couldn't fucking punch anyone. It's kind of lame.
Which makes it a lot easier when you're a dog.
Yeah.
Which made the cartoons so much better, right? Those cartoons, because actually. I think they were more limiting person-on-person violence than they were. So Mighty Mouse and I think Underdog and those other allegorical ones were getting away with a lot more because the Comic Code of Authority was sort of washing over a lot of the people violence.
Yeah, Tom and Jerry Superman, beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, Jesus, yeah. And the Superman cartoons, right, all in those same decades, were just – they weren't good.
Yeah, I have to use my ice.
Try to watch now; they're just not good.
Yeah, but you're also talking about the difference between cartoons and comic books.
Yeah,
which are two different mediums. Right, the Comic Book Code Authority had no control over cartoons.
I just think they were mixed up, right?
Yeah.
Like the same people who were doing the comics were trying to make sure that there wasn't as much violence in Superman as there was in the rest of the universe, and clearly Mighty Mouse, Underdog, Hong Kong Fui, those cartoons were so less realistic
that I think they let them. Yeah.
They just got away with more. And so as a kid, you were like, I don't want to watch Superman. Like every time he gets rid of the bad guy, he picks him up by the scruff of his neck and flies him to jail. And they were just terrible cartoons. Meanwhile, Hong Kong Fooey was pulling out the triple whirlwind back kick out of his book. And I was just waiting for that.
While Spot moved the sofa in such a way as the bad guy fell over it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I liked Underdog. Did you watch we already talked about the Underdog movie, the remake, which wasn't for us. Yeah. Wasn't for us, but a lot of kids did like it.
Yeah, the same thing happens, right? Where it's just a miss for us. But
yeah, it's a miss for us.
Yeah, kids could like it. I don't know. John, I didn't have a kid in that same genre, right?
What's that?
I didn't have a kid in that.
Oh, yeah.
Right, to fill it and be like, oh, I love this, right? To make me feel like I loved it. So, my second one.
Oh, I just want to add, Underdog the movie made $65.3 million at the box office.
Yeah, no one's going to defend Taylor Swift or Underdog the movie. Like, you might hate them, but,
Bank.
You don't need to defend it.
Or those Smurfs.
That's right.
Or the Smurf movies. Yeah. They might not have done that here. But overseas,
there's gold in those blue hills.
Yeah. By the way, the gangster, I looked it up. It was Riff Raff.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's fair.
Josh, who was your two?
My number two, and I know everyone's gonna love this one. Hyper Dog, aka Sergeant Chemo Caesar, from Top Cat.
Sure. I never thought of him as Hyper Dog.
Yeah, nobody did. It's only mentioned like in an old uniform that he puts away in like his drawer before he goes to work one day. Nobody calls him Hyper Dog for the series. But I gotta say, so for our listeners who haven't heard me rave about this comic book, once again, it's Alan Moore just ripping it up in a mythical city in Florida that is full of superpowered people. All the superpowered people in North America are basically banished here. And in this megatropolis in Florida, there is a police force. And at Station 10, they are Top 10. So there's the superpowered police and a superpowered city. And the sergeant, if you think of the Hill Street Blues, the entire comic is essentially a Hill Street Blues allegory. And Kemlo is the sergeant who briefs everybody at the start of the day. And he is a Doberman Pinscher, who at first in the comic book you think is human-shaped, besides with a Doberman head, until he steps out of his robotic uniform and stretches, because he is just a Doberman Pinscher. And he has a humanoid robotic exoskeleton to help him integrate better with the troops at Top 10. This comic book is so goddamn brilliant that as soon as they try to make it into a TV show or a movie,
it'll be ruined.
Absolutely 100% sure to fucking ruin it for me. There's no chance. There's almost no chance. There's such a slim chance that this becomes a theatrical production of something I enjoy because I love the comic so much that it's just gonna irritate the shit out of me. But God help me, I pray for the opposite of what I believe is gonna happen every day, and it's one of my favorite comic books of all time.
It would have to be some giant corporation that did it, like probably Disney or Warner Brothers, one of those two, because they have enough IP that they could stick the background characters in there that you would watch the movie over and over again just trying to pick out the shit that's in the background. If Wes Anderson did this movie,
yes, that's the only person who could put enough background minutia into a film to get me to understand that Top 10 is so good.
Except there's too much
going on.
Yeah, too much action for a Wes Anderson movie.
Is there?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if Wes Anderson has a baby with Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
That would be a beautiful baby.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, fantastic comic book. Just so deep, just mired in comic book history. It's like slogging through pages.
Oh, it's a power fantastic. Bar.
Yeah, it's a you gotta put some time and effort into grazing through that comic book time and time again. I love all the characters. Kemla's a fantastic character, and honestly, I went with Roberto for staying power. But as far as pure comic brilliance in a comic book, Kemlo is probably my favorite all-time canine character in a comic book.
All right, nice. Like I was about to say, like that comic book is a power bar. It is not a candy bar. You don't eat that like num 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 num. You sit down. It's like one of those power bars you almost don't want to finish. It's like that dense. Because every single Subway poster is a thing. Yeah. Every single Subway poster is like a shoe endorsement from the fucking Flash or something, which is really one of the posters in the background that I recall. So, yeah, it's super, super deep. It's like, well, yeah, where's Waldo?
We'll do an entire podcast on King Peacock. I'm just going to talk about that to the end of time.
Just King Peacock, and that's fucking that. Mikey, what's your number two hole there, buddy? Give me your number two hole.
For number two, I'm going to go with a hellhound, son of Hellwolf himself. I am talking the dog that is known across the realms as Death Ripper, or as he is referred to by Loki, Thori. Thori the Hellhound. In the comic books in Journey into Mystery, Loki is trying to get into hell, and in order to do that, he has his own steed, the Hellhound, seduce the guardian of hell. So he, I can't remember what it is in Norse mythology, so he can get past it. But he ends up, his dog knocks up the guardian of hell. Seven Hellhounds are born in the litter. Freya's like, you got to take care of these fucking puppies. Find somewhere to do it. So he goes around to all these different devils and stuff. He's like, hey, you want a hellhound? And, you know, Mephisto takes one. Everybody's taking one, but he can't unload Thori because Thori is the only one of the hellhounds that can speak, and he cusses at everybody. And he can't unload Thori anywhere, and so Freya tells Loki, go throw him into the world tree. Destroy this creature. He's not worth saving. And Loki sees in himself Thori and cannot bear himself to kill this hellhound. So he keeps it. And eventually, as a hellhound would do, he betrays Loki. In fact, he always betrays his owner at some point. He is the exact opposite of a dog in the general sense. He is loyal to only himself. For a while, he was the dog of Damien Hellstorm, but he also betrays him. And currently, he is hanging out with Thor because he likes Thor because Thor kicks ass. And as long as Thor continues to kick ass, Thori will help him.
That is a pretty obscure reference. I think mine's going to be more obscure.
So just before you jump out, so in Norse mythology, there are sort of two giant hellhounds involved, right? Fenrir is obviously most associated with hell as the guardian, but Garm is considered...
Yeah, it's Garm.
Garm is considered the parent of all wolves in Norse mythology. So yeah, there
it is
sort of those two lines that you can sort of pick from for Norse.
Yep, it was definitely Garm.
Okay.
And that's what makes this podcast so special, because between us, we have like 11 degrees. and someone's going to pick up the spare when it comes to mythology or philosophy or biochemistry or... criminal psychology or something. So mine's a little bit more esoteric. Wasn't in a ton of comic books, but his death made me cry so bad that I had to stop reading a comic book. And that was Bats. Bats was Stephen Strange's dog, kind of. Stephen Strange gave up the mantle of Sorcerer Supreme when he was bested by Loki for the mantle and became a veterinarian. Stephen Strange isn't really as much of a doctor anymore as he thought. So he was able to keep his license as a veterinarian, which he'd picked up somewhere along the way. It's okay. It's a comic book. We'll keep going. He opens up a practice. Bats' original owner dies of a heart attack. Bats is 14 at that time. He's adopted two other times and into foster care, and it doesn't take. Stephen Strange can talk to the dog, of course, so the dog's just kind of walking around talking to Stephen Strange in the veterinarian clearing. He kind of becomes Stephen Strange's guide to getting back on his feet and to figuring out that Loki tricked him into the Battle of the Sorcerer Supreme, and Loki actually never won the mantle of Sorcerer Supreme. It was all pretty much just a giant illusion. But Bats goes to bite Loki. Loki puts on a very mild, restraining jacket kind of spell on Bats just to hold him back. But unfortunately, you know, Stephen Strange is like, he has a bad heart. You can't do that, Loki. Bats is losing his mind and has a heart attack and dies.
Aww.
Well, wow. I know. It's super sad. What? Like, Bats and Stephen Strange cannot bring him back. He's like, he's a dog.
Strange should just go out, become Sorcerer Supreme, and murder Loki in his fucking sleep.
He should John Wick Loki.
He did. He like, you killed my dog. And Loki's like, I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. Like, Loki's like, holy fuck. Seriously, Steven. I did not mean to kill your dog.
Oh, it's on.
And he's just holding this dog like John Wick, like, no, you don't understand, man. You killed my just 19 letters of X's and R's and daggers, fucking dog. And he just, boom, one punches Loki with his mystical fist. That's how he gets back his Sorcerer Supreme title. And it's on. He's like, I got you, Loki. And Bats shows up as a ghost occasionally. He's like, don't worry, Doc. I'm in a better place now. That's the voice in my head, by the way. It's a bass
now. But, Jedi like, ghost dog, Loki I agree. Killed. 100%. You're on.
Yeah. Don't voice fucking on. Kill his dog, dude. What is up with that?
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, yeah.
It's a very sad comic. I literally stopped reading. I'm like, the dog's dead? And then I'm like, all right, next page. The Stephen Strange is going to, what the cock? You let the dog's dead. So, yeah. Tommy, what do you got for your next?
I've got Bandit from an Alan
Johnny
Moore.
Quest.
Nope.
What?
Not that
what?
Bandit.
And not from Johnny Quest? Fuck
not
off.
From Johnny, not
nope,
from
sorry.
Johnny Quest.
I'm dismissing you.
From what?
From an Alan Moore comic called We Three.
Okay.
Which he's a good dog.
He's a great, dog. Great comic. It was a neighborhood
it's
dog.
The old Yeller of comics.
Seriously.
He gets beat to death with a shovel?
Pretty much.
It was a neighborhood dog that was taken and experimented on and turned into a weapon. And there was such a great scene where this guy in a river was cut in half, but the dog tries to save him and pulls him ashore. It says, in his mind, the dog says, I'm a good dog, saving the guy. Good dog.
He is a good dog.
He's a good dog.
He is a good dog.
I will always remember that panel.
It's a great fucking panel.
It's a good panel.
You're not wrong. It's fucking so hard. That's a heartbreaking goddamn panel.
I love Grant Morrison. And I gotta say, if you guys loved Far From Home and wanted to add Old Yeller to it, it is depressing as all get out. It's sad as fuck, and Bill has not read this comic, nor has he seen Old Yeller, so all those conditions are met. So, Bill, if you're listening, at the end of We Three, they finally reunite with their original owner, and he takes them out back and beats them to death with a shovel. Spoiler. Yeah, that's right. Spoiler. The spoiler's back. You didn't even expect it because I wasn't using the voice.
God damn it. This podcast is making me sad. Josh, give me a happy dog for fuck's sake.
Such a good dog.
I started the sentence. I blame me. Go ahead, Josh.
I was going to go with Snowy from Tintin, but we mentioned him straight out of the gate, so I feel like he's sort of ubiquitous. So I'm going to rock out to one of my alternates right now. He's not really a comic book guy, but he is a manga guy, and I love him so much. I'm not much of a manga guy, to tell you the truth. Like, there are very few of the manga cartoons that really draw me in. But I got to say, I love Cowboy Bebop, and one of the reasons is – Einstein, a.k.a. Ein, the corgi of corgis. He is brilliant. He is smart. He is fuzzy and cute. He gets shit done all day long while people are fucking off not doing their jobs. And I love Ein.
All right. Well argued, my friend.
He's so fucking cute, and he knows everything. He's a dog who knows everything. He never says anything. He does. He's once again one of those dogs who looks up, has an expression that says, I have solved this puzzle for you. Why don't you go sit the fuck down in your spaceship while I get everything done? He's a great dog. He's a great dog.
Yeah, that's a dog you want on your side.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mikey, what do you got for your next dog?
Well, wow, I'm going to go back to Dark. And nothing is more dark than Wonder Dog. I know what you're thinking. Are you talking about Wonder Dog from Marvin and Wendy and the Super Friends? Yes, yeah. I am. First appearing in 1976, in comic books, that is. Yeah. Wendy and Marvin and Wonder Dog were in the first season of the Super Friends. They realized that they were worthless and replaced them with Zan and Jaina and Gleek the Wonder Monkey. But it doesn't matter because Wonder Dog has entered into the Parthenon, and he is
the Parthenon or the Pantheon?
The Parthenon. He walked into the building.
Just walked into the building.
Just ask it, okay?
Yeah.
And that's when it crumbled.
Oh, if only. So in the comic books, Wendy and Marvin do appear in the Super Friends comic book, which is not part of continuity, but later on they get introduced as the caretakers for Titan's Tower. And they are actually twins at this point, and they are the son and daughter of the supervillain, the Calculator. And there's a whole storyline involving them, but what makes it sad is Wonder Dog gets possessed by a hellhound and fucking kills Marvin.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're in the darkest timeline. For those of you who watch Community, this is the fucking episode, right? This is the darkest timeline. Wonder
this is
Dog.
The mirror universe of the Wonder Twins. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Wonder Dog. He never gets a chance for redemption.
Well, once you kill Marvin, that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
Yet. Fine. I'm going to go a little bit lighter and go with Ace the Bat Dog. Not Yay, Ace. Bat Dog! Drink. All right, good. Someone had to have Ace, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody did. It wasn't going to be me.
I think he originated in 1955, another creation of Bill Finger. The reason he's wearing the stupid, stupid bat cowl is because he originally belonged to a gangster, and he had like a big lightning bolt kind of streak. And they were trying to find this guy, and you know the dog knew where he was. But Batman goes, well, if they see that big fucking streak on his head, they're going to know who he is. So he made a cowl for him. And then Batman just took a shining to Ace the Bat Hound. And there we go, Ace the Bat Hound.
Now let's talk about his current iteration under the Tom King, though. That is the superior Ace. He's got your favorite thing, the character journey, the story arc. Joker is running a dog fighting ring, and he gets captured by the Batman, but all the dogs are left in this one fucking pit. And Ace kills all of the other dogs to survive in that pit. And when they finally find him, they take him to the shelter to get euthanized. And Alfred goes in, adopts him, and makes Damien learn how to take care of the dog, which is fucking ferocious as all get out, just like Damien, to give Damien a sense of empathy for other living creatures. It's actually awesome. A beautiful story, and Damien is so attached to Ace that if anything happened to it, he would fucking John Wick everybody.
and he is the 5'2" version of John Wick, and I would love to see that entire
five feet of concrete, that kid.
That's right. I'm in on that.
Yeah, if you get a chance to read the Ace Crypto crossover in the Super Sons, I think it was annual number 2, it is just a thing of beauty. It's one of my favorite single issue comics ever.
Is that the one where they have that origin story, or is it different?
No, it's different. It's a story where Crypto and Ace team up, and they are trying to rescue a bunch of animals that are in danger.
Okay, I'd see that.
And they end up bringing them all to Wayne Manor. And so Damien comes out in the morning to drink his coffee because he's fucking an insane 12-year-old. And there's nothing but pets and animals all over Wayne Manor. And he's like, calls up Jonathan Kent, like, I know your fucking dog was behind this. I know it.
Come get your dog, man. Come get your fucking dog.
Superboy.
My dog cannot drive a truck. My dog is awesome, but he's not driving a truck full of animals to Wayne Manor, you asshole. Crypto has the technology. Who else has got one?
I think I have one that we can all agree on that nobody's mentioned. I really thought this would come up sooner. Lockjaw.
Oh, Lockjaw. That's a great one. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know, Mike. Yeah, I can see the look on your face, Mike. Where is he a dog or is he a person that looks like a dog? I get it. He is a character, but for all intents and purposes, he is oft represented. And even
he's always put in the super pet specials and stuff.
Yeah, and super demoted maybe to pet status, where Lockjaw is not really a dog and or a pet, but he's the representation of that a lot of times. We don't get a lot of that in Marvel. I get that DC had a sort of an ingrained four color kind of like a little kookier family friendly feel over the years that sort of integrated more pets than DC managed to than Marvel managed to over the years, and so when you get sort of those characters in Marvel, they're usually a little more blended and a little less specific than DC, right? So you get Lockjaw, who's not really a dog, but he is a dog. He's an inhuman who looks like a dog. I get it. He's an inhuman, and I shouldn't. You know, it's probably a little speciest for me to say that he's a dog. But for this specific part, you know, Marvel doesn't do a good job at it, right? They don't really. Is there really a deep seated dog in Marvel that I don't know about?
Tom and I named 2 dogs that are super obscure that no one other than us had heard of those dogs, right?
Yeah.
Right.
There's no major dog character in Marvel Comics.
Well, Miss Lion.
Don't make me fucking come to Boston.
At least get to New Haven. We'll see how it goes.
And
anyway.
Of course, yeah, okay.
So Marvel doesn't really do that. It's not that they don't do it well. It's not that they don't do it, right? It's not a thing in Marvel. Marvel has always sort of had the bent where we are a little closer to, you know, a world that is dystopian, right? It's not the four color. It's never had a four color poster sort of phase like DC did, and that's where all those sort of DC characters come from.
You know,
so
even though they
made the mark or they made the cut, it's not what a very common theme in modern comics.
Yeah, you know, oddly, the only pet that I can think of that is totally mainstream that even makes it into the title is Devil Dinosaur.
Well, I would put I'm blanking on the name. Kitty Pryde's dragon.
Lockheed.
Lockheed is one of the few.
Like
animal intelligent sort of characters that makes it through a very long storyline of Marvel.
True.
What about the Falcons?
Redwing.
Oh, Redwing.
We already did pets in episode number 107. If they want to go back and listen to that,
that's right. We're doing the super dogs.
Yeah. So I would say, as far as canines are concerned in Marvel, Lockheed's pretty much the only one.
Well, you said Lockheed, but you meant
Lockjaw. Yeah.
Also, like the second most powerful teleporter in all of Marvel.
Second?
Lila Cheney.
Yeah, Lila Cheney's probably the most powerful.
Lila Cheney's clearly the most powerful.
Yeah, and Lockjaw is probably the second most powerful teleporter. Yeah. I mean, we can argue that back and forth.
I mean, he transports from the moon to the Earth. That's a long way.
I'll give you him as number two.
I mean, there might be some obscure one, you know, that we're not thinking about. Who was the guy with the... there was the Australian guy with the didgeridoo, but the woo.
Yeah, the guy from.
But he was only on Earth, so yeah.
Well, there's also Cloak.
Cloak, yeah, but we haven't seen him go into fucking space.
Magic.
Oh, Magic's interdimensional. That's pretty fucking big too.
Pretty badass, yeah. As far as the teleporter.
Well, the teleporter's another day.
We're off on a tangent.
Let me talk real quick about Pizza Dog. Pizza Dog!
Yeah, I couldn't believe that nobody brought up Diane's favorite.
Just waiting to bring it up.
Come on now, yeah. Pizza Dog is awesome. Yeah. Is he super powerful?
Nope.
No. Does he know which side of his toast the bread is buttered on?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's given a chance to go with which Hawkeye. He knows which Hawkeye is going to be able to kick kibble in that bowl, and it ain't Clint. So people who don't know Pizza Dog was originally owned by members of the Tracksuit Mafia, right? That's correct. And there was a series of adventures that led Pizza Dog to find Clint. Clint got Pizza Dog away from the Tracksuit Mafia, and the Pizza Dog helped him fight the Tracksuit Mafia in
Pizza
a few
Dog
ways.
Saves his life because Clint gives him a slice of pizza, and the dog remembers and turns on his owner and saves Clint. And so Clint, therefore, he doesn't care about anything else, but he's going to save this fucking dog's life. And
save that damn dog.
And the beauty of Pizza Dog is there's a whole episode of Hawkeye, or a whole issue of Hawkeye, devoted to just telling the story from Pizza Dog's point of view, or Lucky, depending on what you want to call him.
Reminds me, there's a great video out there called John Wick's Dog, in which the bad guys come in and they shoot John Wick, and the dog fucking loses it. He just starts maiming motherfuckers. It's actually pretty well done. Tommy, you got a last one for us or an honorable mention? Honorable mention.
I do. Dogpool.
Dogpool, all right.
You go to hell. You go to hell, sir.
What?
What's wrong with Dogpool?
What's wrong with Dogpool? He was a dog that barked too much that was experimented on.
I mean, you might as well just go with dog.
Well, we don't want to go with Dog the Bounty Hunter.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead with Dogpool. Tell us all about Dogpool.
Yeah. What superpowers does Dogpool have, my friend?
He can withstand a lot of damage, just like Deadpool. He's a merc with a bark.
That's
He was experimenting on me.
Are you happy saying that out loud? Mark with a bark.
Mark with a bark.
If you're not happy saying it out loud, they couldn't have been happy putting it on paper.
He was experimented on for the Mascara X project, trying to make a long-lasting mascara for the, and then the company Babeline Cosmetics, trying to get into the number one slot, and he became the Merc with a Bark. Dog pool.
I'm going to go with Rex the Wonder Dog. And we back up to him.
Let's go back to Rex. 1952.
They introduce Rex. He has his own series, his own comic book for 7 years. He outdoes most of the Golden Age superheroes. He lasts longer than all of them. And depending on what kind of continuity you want to talk about, Rex may have superpowers. He's got sort of super strength, right? And longevity. In the latest rendition, it turns out that Rex and Detective Chip, they both drank out of the Fountain of Youth to give them the longevity. So here's one of the sadder stories that Rex actually outlives his owners. They haven't really done that story, but I think that is the perfect story for friend of the podcast, Mark Russell, to write. And I know he won't, but I'd love it if he took a shot at
Rex. Mark, if you're listening. And actually, there's a marginal chance you are listening. Get in there.
Honorable mention for me, I want to talk briefly about Cap Wolf.
No.
Bad Tom. Let's not forget the time that Captain America was a werewolf for a while, guys. I'm just saying.
No.
If Josh set the perimeters, he said wolves were on, point.
That's my bad.
Yep. Captain America was a werewolf. That happened. We let it happen, and we have to live with that.
Do we?
One last honorable mention, guys. We got this thing's going long as shit. What do you got, Mike? What do you got there, Josh?
I had two honorable mentions. Well, first of all, I didn't think of Bandit from Johnny Quest. And I know it might not have been a comic book. I mean, I'm sure it was a comic book.
It was a hell of a lot of comic books.
But really, when we dug in when we were kids, watching Johnny Quest was the first cartoon in our youth, I mean, and for me, for a very long time, where people actually died, right?
Where some motherfucker got shot, yeah.
Race Bannon shot people in the face. And Bandit was there to witness it all. That dog survived it. Bandit was awesome. Let's move on. Second of all, we glossed over Crypto pretty quick. Third of all, Cosmo. From Marvel, right?
One, yeah.
We really just ditched right around Cosmo. So, folks, Bandit, for our younger listeners, go find classic first-run Johnny Quest cartoons and watch them. It is really what started us into any sort of realistic cartoons, anything that resembled comic books, anything that resembled, like, real sort of day-to-day violence. That's the legend of Johnny Quest. Maybe, fortunately or unfortunately, you pick it there. Crypto, everybody knows Crypto. And then Cosmo, we get to see Cosmo sort of spread his wings all throughout the MCU and the Guardians of the Galaxy and a couple other spots in the Avengers. So go see Cosmo. He's out there exploring the universe, that poor bastard NASA dog, his little helmet on, just trying to survive.
And he's made an appearance in Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He is part of the collector's collection.
Oh, yeah. He's in Galaxy and one of the Avengers. Yeah.
So for my honorable mention, I want to just give a shout out to Robert Kanninger, a comic book writer who created not only Streak, who ended up taking over Green Lantern's comic book, the original Green Lantern. He also created Rex the Wonder Dog, but it's sandwiched in between those two creations. He created Pooch in 1950. Pooch was a member of the Losers. He was he won a Purple Heart. He was a dog that was trained to sniff out and help fight in World War II. So I think Kerninger must have obviously loved dogs, so he kept on creating all these dogs for all the comics he was writing, or he realized people like dogs. But either way, salute to you, Robert Kerninger, and salute to Pooch, who unfortunately has not survived really into modern iterations. He was in the 1950 war comics, lasting all the way until the 70s, but then in the 1980s or 90s, when they did the Vertigo series of the Losers, they updated it, and Pooch became a black dude, which he was. I'm not lying about this.
I know. Just to make it better.
I know.
That happened, and we let it happen.
And then later on, DC retold the Losers as being stranded on Dinosaur Island, and Pooch is a robotic velociraptor, which I know sounds cool.
Okay, maybe.
But
but not so much.
It's not as cool as the original Pooch.
Ugh.
Well, one last thing I want to say about dogs and dogs in comic books and dogs in general when it came to being in action adventure things like Bandit. I really thought as a kid that Quicksand was more of a fucking problem.
And your dog would have to help you out of it?
Yeah. The dog would have to signal someone that I'd fallen in Quicksand. I thought there was more Quicksand around than was advertised, because people fell in Quicksand a lot, and dogs got them out of it often in those old serials.
In the 70s.
In the 70s, Quicksand was just fucking around. Hey, Rob.
Mostly Carter that brought the Quicksand thing around.
Carter bring the Quicksand to the yard.
If you wanted to get saved by any dog when it came to Quicksand, you would want Elmo, Sandman's trusty steed. Elmo was well endowed. He grew to super size proportions. All right, he was a great Dane.
He was a good Dane.
He wasn't just
He was a great Dane.
He was one of the better Danes.
You'll never find a better Scotsman.
Go ahead, LT.
I've just got a couple of honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Gnort from the Green Lanterns.
Well, I thought he was a squirrel.
Gnort Esplanade Despacker? No.
It was a squirrel.
He was a dog.
Gnort from Gnut.
He was a dog.
My bad. I always thought he was a squirrel.
He was a dog.
Today. Thank you for educating me, LT. He looks like a squirrel.
His uncle knew people. That's how he got to be in the Corps.
I knew that. I just thought he was a goddamn squirrel.
And then K-9 from Doctor Who. Yes, he was a robot K-9. Dog, but he was still a dog.
That counts. Doctor Who guy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But I mean, I remember, that was Tom Baker, so I remember K-9.
Yeah.
So I will tell you this. Our dog companions. This is also my. I'm going to take my whole segment today.
Are we on a tangent? Josh, take us on a tangent about dogs.
Absolutely. My two dogs, Dodger and Baxter. Right. Dodger's a rescue.
You rolled 20s on those dogs, buddy.
I rolled 20s on both of those dogs. My wife told me that when we got the new house, we were going to settle in, and I'm making air quotes for the people who can't see us at home, and we weren't going to get a dog for 6 to 9 months. So about 11 days later, I was like, fuck that noise.
It's good that you weren't married to Magic's ex-wife. She would have killed it.
Yeah.
Josh, by the way, how many beers are we in? Because we got Sentimental Josh, people. That's usually about 6 beers in. I love Sentimental Josh. You got Sentimental Tom here, too.
But they're pretty high. They're pretty high babies, so who knows? And so we go to get the dog. Initially, we pick this dog, who is a poodle mix, one of the big poodle mixes. and we show up day of at a rest area in Connecticut, having shuttled up a bunch of dogs from the south. Now, we show up and they're like, oh, there's a mistake. Like, that dog is going with his family here, but we have this other dog. Do you want to see him? And we're like, yeah. And little Dodger comes, you know, shaved way shorter than he should be and just skinny and scared. And they put that dog in front of me and I'm like, that's my fucking dog. So I latch him up to his, you know, his leash, and I walk him around for a bit, and he's scared and, you know, skinny, and he's turning his head in towards his tail, and he doesn't know what's going on. And we put that dog in my car, we drive him home, and Dodger is the best goddamn dog I've ever owned. God rest every other puppy I've ever had in this world. I love them all. But Dodger, man, he's a good dog.
That's a good dog, man.
Dog. And Baxter is Dodger's dog. He's not my dog.
Yeah, your dog got a dog. That's a good dog.
Like, I get that, like, yeah, my dog is the best dog ever, but Dodger's dog is pretty good. I love Baxter. He's got good stuff going on, but I tell you, folks, man, go get a rescue. Go find a dog. Baxter's been hurt by people. Like, and it's taken a while for him to come round. He's got scars on legs. He's missing a toe. If you walk towards Baxter with a stick or a staff in your hand, he is a shrinking violet. Sad. So go find a dog that needs some love, man. There's so many out there. And that's going to be my tangent.
We're all giving us dog stories.
Yeah, go find a critter that that needs some families, man.
Tommy, you had a great dog.
I did have a great dog.
What was that dog's name again?
Abner.
Oh, Abner was a good dog. He had such an expressive face. That was a good dog.
He was a great dog.
Thanks, Tommy. Mikey,
he was the most peaceful dog. He hardly ever barked. He was just he would just come up to you, and just if he wanted to go out, he would just give you a little whine and just, you know, let you know that he needed to go out. But he was a very gentle dog. He was a great dog.
He had that clown makeup kind of face, which I thought was so cute. Yeah, those big white eyes and the big white mouth. Mikey, you've had a bunch of great dogs. Bear was a great dog. Ugh, Remy is a great dog. Bear was a dog, man.
Bear was
a dog
growing up.
So my best rescue dog by far is Ramirez.
You love a little Ramirez.
Ramirez, that's a good dog, man.
When I first found Ramirez, I was at the FBI headquarters in Houston, Texas. I was walking out and I saw a dog hobble into the bushes. And I was like, that dog looks like it's hurt. I tried to get it out. It would not come out. I could see it had been chewing on a rat. The dog looked like it was starving and had been run over. And I couldn't lure it out, so I went to the nearest Subway sandwich shop, and I said to the guy, give me a meatball sub. He's like, what do you want on it? I'm like, I don't need anything on it. He goes, that's weird. I'm like, it's for a dog. I'm trying to lure it out so I can – it's been run over. I'm trying to get it out so I can bring it to a vet. And the guy's like, well, there's no fucking charge for this. You just take the fucking –
The dog also wants one with cheese in.
The odd part was the dog decided to eat something.
He also wants some chips, man.
The dog was really thirsty, too. I don't want this. Can I get something from D'Angelo's instead?
So I lured Ramirez out. I grabbed her. I brought her to the nearest vet. And I was like, you got to do something to save this dog. And they told me, this dog is beyond saving. Just let us put it down. And I had just lost my other dog, less than a year earlier, getting run over by a car. And I was like, there's no way this fucking dog is dying on my watch. And they're like, okay, well, we can save the dog, but it's going to be $1,200. And I was like, fuck, I don't have $1,200. Let me think about it. So I went home that night, and my mom called me up and said, you just got a check from the military. They had owed me money. It's for $1,250. And I was like, oh, it's all right.
Fine, so, God. Fuck you, too. Fine.
So I paid for the dog to get its life saved, and I would go visit it on my way back from work in the evenings, and the dog would – they would bring the dog into the room, and the dog would just pee because it was so afraid of humans. And for 3 weeks, I would just sit in the room with the dog for an hour – and just talk to it for, you know, and eventually after week two, the dog would scurry over to me and just put its head on my lap. And I was like, this is going to be the best fucking dog ever. And I called up all my friends. I was like, hey, who needs a dog? And Tom, you're the one who said, I will take that fucking dog. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, you will. What do you want to name it? Because the staff is tired of calling it Stray, and it's going to start responding to the name Stray if I don't name it. And you said, I want to call that dog Ramirez. And I'm like, okay. And a week later, I brought Ramirez home, and I called you up, and I'm like, Tom, come get Ramirez. And you were like, yeah, Lainey said we can't have a dog.
Which is insane, because 2 weeks later, she goes, we're getting a dog. Like, motherfucker.
Yes, Ramirez is the best dog dog rescue I've ever done.
All right, let me just quickly say something about Tug. Tug is, I've always wanted a English bulldog. I love English bulldogs, but we are monsters for breeding these fuckers. Don't breed English bulldogs. You can only breed them one at a time. They take like two scientists and a jack-off machine to make a dog. Every single birth is C-section because their hips aren't wide enough. Stop breeding these things. But I always said if I found one as a rescue, oh, yeah, it's a rescue. So one day my wife says, hey, there's a bulldog at the pound. He hasn't been no one's tried to adopt him for 2 years. Like, this dog's been in a fucking pound for 2 years. I go and meet this guy. He is fucked. He's got, like, huge welts on his face. His jowls are all infected. He's chewing out one of his own legs. Bulldogs are a pain in the ass to keep alive. They are just giant yeast factories that you have to clean like every couple of hours, or else they just get gross. And they were doing their best with this guy, but he needed a lot of help. And his name at the time was Costello. And I took him for a walk, and he put his little face in my lap, and I'm like, all right, you're my dog. And we didn't come up with a name with him until the next day. I don't know if I ever told you this, guys, but it was raining outside, and I'm taking Costello for a fucking walk, and it's raining, like, really hard in Boston, and I trip on the lawn, and I fall on my back, and Tugboat just keeps walking. And I'm just being dragged behind him down the sidewalk because he's a fucking giant-ass English bull. And I'm like, all right, Tugboat it is. And that's how Tugboat got his name. Sentimental Tom and Josh and Sentimental Mike are happy to bring you this episode. And there's a big picture of Baxter with a good dog. Seriously, though, man, get a dog. LT, get a goddamn dog.
Goddamn fucking LT, freak. What the fuck?
Your wife wants a kid. Get a dog first, for fuck's sake.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
And that brings us to the front of the long box. Mikey, what do you got?
At the front of the long box, I'm going to pull from our mailbag, and we got a question about boob windows.
So, Power Girl, okay, go.
Yeah, okay.
Our friend of the podcast, Diane, wanted to know if there was a female superhero, with a boob window with a black costume.
Sure, black costume. Why black costume?
So,
black costume Santana? Boob
window? Yeah. LT, you nailed it.
Santana.
Yeah, in the Justice League, the Bronze Age.
She originally
started off wearing the traditional magician kind of outfit, but then she put her hair back and dressed in a black outfit with a red half cape and had the boob window on her costume for no apparent reason.
Why does Diana need this information? Is she making a costume? Because I'm all in for that.
I mean, yeah.
Hey, I'm not. Who am I to question why Diane needs information about boob windows? I am merely happy to provide that answer. So, fun Alex fact, Zatanna was the first one that I thought of. I couldn't really think of any others. I know there's a lot of them with very low-cut Vs and stuff, like Black Cat and stuff like that. But I couldn't think of the boob window other than Zatanna. And the only other real boob window I could think of was Sue Storm. But her costume was blue when she had the four boob window.
Oh, you're talking about the Malice.
No, Malice actually had a very low-cut V. She didn't have the boob window. I was actually talking about the non-Malice Sue Storm, who was sporting short leotard kind of thing.
Yeah. I know what we're talking about.
Yep. Okay.
Any other boob windows you guys can think of? Any prominent boob windows?
I mean, there's Power Girl. I don't think a black uniform there.
There's only a couple for men, even. That was Damon Hellstrom did have a boob window costume for a while where he was rocking a very kind of glam rock punky thing where he just had that part cut out and the straps over the shoulder.
Do you guys remember Cosmic Boys halter top?
Oh, yeah, Cosmic. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What's up, Cosmic Boy?
Sorry.
Did you? Go,
yeah,
boy.
I think, Duplicate.
It was more demure. Not Duplicate, the other one, Triplicate. I think Triplicate had something that was a little showy there for the décolletage at one point in the more modern era.
I don't know. Legion of Superheroes. I mean, if I would understand if it was we're talking about when Mike Grell was drawing the Legion of Superheroes, because it was basically porn.
It was the Wildstar series. It was the Wildstar time. Because remember how Wildstar was drawn? Who was the Native American that could track across?
Dawnstar.
It was during the Dawnstar era, and I believe I remember Triplicate had kind of something going on with that.
I don't think she was there. I can't remember her outfit.
Maybe I think it's Shrinking Violet.
Shrinking Violet had the V.
Yeah, she had a V. You're right.
Yeah, a lot of them had Vs, and Grell would see how far down he could get with that V.
We've talked.
It was the post belly button.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anywho, that was my front of the long box.
Yeah.
What do you got at the back of the long box there, Tommy?
I have Batman White Knight from 2017 by Sean Murphy.
Unrelated.
Shabafay.
This is a story where Batman kicks the crap out of the Joker and stuffs a bunch of pills down his throat, and the Joker becomes sane for a bit and tries to reform Gotham. And he gets a big settlement from Gotham because he got the crap kicked out of him by Batman while Gordon just sat there watching. And he takes his big settlement and he tries to build a library in one of the poorest parts of Gotham and runs for office and is all sane and it all goes wonky in the end. And it was a pretty good Batman story.
3-18, Kwai Chang Kang, Legend of Kung Fu. 3-18, go.
18.
Solid 17 for me.
Yeah, it's a 17 for me.
You're wrong.
All right.
10. Mikey?
10.
You're also wrong.
Defend yourself, sir.
No. No.
Artist
he
objective.
He has no defense. It's 18. He just doesn't know what he's talking
just
about.
Wrong.
I only saw one episode.
See? It's just misinformation.
Look, I didn't say I could make an informed decision. You asked me to make a call on it, I did.
Yeah,
you know,
and he did. He's wrong. He
you're
has
wrong.
To be an
just sit
decision.
There and you're wrong.
We're all just waiting for time to pass. Michael, you know, grow up and watch the show. You guys will decide that 17s really aren't what you were thinking. It's just a misinformation, sort of a twitch in the universe where you looked at something that wasn't quite right when you saw it the first time, and now when you look at it again, it's an 18. We're all just going to go about our business. It's done.
I'm already there, Josh. 18.
18. We're done.
Grow with us, LT.
17 and a half?
18. No. He's done.
He's
anyway.
Still wrong, but that's okay. Let's do some plugs, gentlemen.
I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com. And, of course, we always like to thank our friends over at whosnextgaming.com. If you're interested in podcasts about video games, sex robots, comics and movies, go ahead and check them out at whosnextgaming.com.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Rocket Dog. Rocket Dog is where I got Tugboat. Rocket Dog is a terrific place to search for animal shelters for dogs that can need a little help. They also have older dogs, which Tugboat is and was. I adopted Tugboat when he was, I believe it was 7, which is fucking ancient for a bulldog. He's going on 10 now, which is ridiculous for a bulldog. So, yeah, poor little fella.
I'd like to plug GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hello, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyors of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker box glasses, stickers, posters, more. You name it, they
hats.
Got it.
I got my Lovecraft beer hat. Fucking got shipped today. I cannot fucking wait to get that hat.
Oh, you're not wearing it?
Yeah, because I got shipped today.
Oh, gotcha.
In the next few months, I will be moving, and I will be buying a house, and I will be getting a Geek Orthodox stained glass window for my office.
For your home office?
Yes, for my home office. I don't think the government building would appreciate that.
Chipping in.
I'll chip in.
We're all chipping in.
We'll chip in. We'll all chip in.
We're sticking a Tiamat.
Nice.
They've already got the pattern for Tiamat. Nice. I'm all in on that.
It should be a beholder who's looking at you.
How about a mind flayer making out with a beholder while Tiamat's being cuckolded?
Ooh, I like this. I've read this fanfic already. Yeah, it's not that original. Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, any of those things. I love this stained glass.
That is terrific stuff.
Oh my god, a stained glass stilt man.
You got it. Who's he fighting? Yeah. Gorilla Grodd. I think that does about just about does it for plugs and everything.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank our
is that what it is?
Yeah.
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 Well,
yeah.
We should also mention if you guys do enjoy this podcast, you can check out our bonus podcast over at where is that bonus
Patreon.
Podcast?
/44/TheLongBoxGuys at patreon.com, where we get you a bonus podcast every single week called The Geek Leak. And or what was the other one called?
The Goat.
Come listen and to us.
Josh, you have to come up with the next one. What are you thinking, buddy?
Let's talk about the Geek League first. We talk about all the geeky things that we've been doing for the week. And it's anywhere from 10 to 20 to upwards of 40 minutes, depending on how drunk we are and ramble. So, you get to hear all that. And it's merely $1 a month.
Shut your mouth, you cocksucking whore.
Or just you know, subscribe and get an extra podcast where it's nice and we're all nice and nice things happen.
The money that we've been earning on this has been going into our Patreon account, and we are matching the funds and donating to the Elizabeth Peabody House for their food bank. And if we get every new subscriber we get up to $1,000, we're going to donate $10 up to $1,000.
Yeah. So every new subscriber up to the first 100, another $10 goes to the Peabody House in Boston. We're happy to have new folks come on in, and we're happy to give money so that the so that Tom and his and everyone in Boston gets a fair shake on food and just being good people.
Being good people, that's what we're all about.
Hopefully at some point we're just good people.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say I think for next week, I had an idea in my head. It was like 11 seconds ago.
Let's do it.
Lost it.
Come on.
I'm thinking it's coming back around. And what comes around goes around.
I'll tell you why. Why?
Yeah, please tell me why.
Get around. Love will find a way. Just give it time.
I just like making Tom sing.
We don't have the rights to that. Stop singing.
It's the band is called Rat. Do you think they're going to care?
I don't want to have a rat problem.
We already got beef with L7. You're right.
Yeah. Fuck. I just had something. It's coming.
If it comes back to you, let us know. In the meantime, Josh, your house, quarantine, is that still your sector?
My sector is wherever we can put our money and time to make the best things for the people who need it the most.
Damn right. Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Awesome.
And
LT,
nice
sweet, sweet LT.
Is he still on the call?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just turned off his camera. Any last words for us?
Hashtag bankrupt Kentucky, because McConnell's a dick.
And don't forget what I always say, don't diss what you hate, like Kentucky. Just promote what you love, like Massachusetts. And you'll live a lot longer if you take that philosophy. Good night from the Longbox, guys.